This is Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart along with Dave Bourne here at KYKN 1430. And welcome to Newsmakers. We're with you every weekday from noon to one, talking about local events, local initiatives, local institutions, local individuals, ideas, and all that good stuff. People that make things happen that affect our quality of life, that affect our pocketbooks, all sorts of things, and just special things that happen around the Salem-Keizer area and Marion and Polk counties. Gosh, it's so many things to talk about. So welcome, and it's nice to have you with us. And today we're going to talk about wine. So if you're a wine drinker, you're not a wine drinker, this is an industry that affects our region to a great degree in terms of its employment base, in terms of its economic development driver, all sorts of things. So stick with us, even if you do not drink wine, because we have in studio with us today Wendy Bennett Kirkland, to tell us all about Willamette Valley Vineyards and the industry in general. So it's a pretty darn good story, I got to tell you. It should be books written about the mid-Willamette Valley, have to include Willamette Valley Vineyards. So Wendy Bennett Kirkland, first of all, welcome.
Oh, thanks. Glad to be here.
And I want to say congratulations on your recent wedding.
Oh, thank you so much.
Her last name is, switching. A lot of people know you as Wendy Bennett, of course.
That's right.
You've been that a long time.
Yep.
But now there's a Mr. Kirkland. So you marry the owner of Costco.
No.
So Wendy, thanks for being here. You've been working at Willamette Valley Vineyards for how long?
Over a decade.
Yeah. Over a decade.
11 years.
Wow. Yeah. So this is a great story. I wish I could tell it, except I would only get a few of the highlights and I get some things wrong, but you have a lot of intimate knowledge. So let's talk a little bit about Willamette Valley Vineyards. It's up in the hill, just south of town, kind of borders, straddles between Turner, right, and Salem. But it's a behemoth, really, in the wine industry, especially in Oregon, and a huge driver of changes in the industry. And, of course, as I said, a huge driver of money flowing into the region as they trade their wares and sell their wines all over the nation and the world.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're nationwide and in a few countries, too.
So, Wendy.
We're doing it.
Wendy, your business card said that you are a senior winery ambassador.
Isn't that fancy?
Senior winery. What does that mean?
Well, I bring the story of Oregon to other states as well. So I'm an ambassador of Oregon wine, and in particular, Willamette Valley Vineyards.
And so are you going to different trade association things or trade shows? And
sometimes, yeah. Do trade shows, wine events. I travel the country.
Marketplaces in terms of where you go out. I don't even know how wine is
usually
sold.
Usually what I would do is I'd work with a distributor. Okay. We have distributors all around the country that choose to move our brand. And they have sales reps that need to learn about our wine. And so I'll travel into a state and work with those sales reps and visit their accounts and get what we call placements.
Wow. Does anybody ever say no to you?
No.
Yeah.
No. It's really good wine. It's great wine, and the story of Oregon is really unique. And Oregon wine's on fire. So it's really, I don't get a lot of no's because the wine really is so great.
Yeah, and Oregon wine on fire. I hate to say this, it's such an easy one. It's not like California wine.
Poor
is
babies.
On fire.
Poor
there.
Babies.
They're really struggling down there with some of their areas and the wildfires, but that's opportunity for Oregon as well, especially for wine tourists, because you do have a facility, an entire industry here in Northwest Oregon wrapped around wine and people that drink it and people that travel to find it and taste it and all that good stuff, right?
Yeah, we are really definitely a fortunate place in that we're easy to get to. We're right in between Seattle and San Francisco, and it's not hard to get into Portland, in and out of Portland. And our region is huge.
Yeah.
I mean,
and you're on the I-5 corridor.
Yep. corridor, you know, and you know, you go out and visit places and people have never been to Oregon and you tell them about Oregon and then they don't really believe you when you say, oh my gosh, it's one of the most magical places. Actually, technically, just to let you know, if I don't really care for the person, I just say, oh, it rains in Oregon all the time.
But you don't want to move
right,
it there.
Right. But if I really like the person, I'm like, you've got to get out there. And then once they do, they are mesmerized.
All right. We're going to talk a little bit about how Willamette Valley Vineyards was founded mm-hmm. and growth from its incipient stages. So it was always owned by Jim Burnell. Is his brainchild. Is that correct?
It is his brainchild. But technically, I don't know that we can say that it's always owned by Jim Burnell. I mean, poor Jim, you know, barely had two pennies to rub together. He worked at a sawmill when he was in college, so he didn't have family money. They always say, how do you make a million in the wine industry? Is you start with 10 million. Mm-hmm. It's a really expensive endeavor. But it had been his brainchild for sure. It was a dream he'd had since he was a young man. We're talking like 10, 12 years old, as strange as that is. He was impacted really early on to want to get in this industry.
So the very first years, the very first production of wines occurred in what year?
Well, we started growing fruit in 1983. But it takes 3 or so years to be able to grow fruit mm-hmm. That's even viable to be able to make into wine. And so our first year of actually producing grapes, because we didn't even have a facility until 1989. So in 1986, our very first vintage of fruit was actually sold to Erath. So 86, okay. 87, and 88 were all sold to Dick Erath because we were just wine growers at the time. We weren't making wine. And then in 1989, we made our first vintage.
Okay. And that is a wine brand for those people who are not familiar with that label. That's right.
Willamette Valley Vineyards label.
No, yeah. Erath.
Oh, Erath. Yes, it is a wine label. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Still is. Still
okay.
is.
Indeed.
Yep.
So you were talking before we even started about how the Oregon wine industry has been a collaboration of effort with the growers and helping each other.
Oh,
it seems
absolutely.
So unusual in the cutthroat world of, you know, commodity build, you know, sales and business.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's a lot of dog eat dog world going on, but certainly not in the wine industry here in Oregon. The way that it was developed was, I mean, people just meeting up for coffee and talking about, does this work for you? Does that work for you? Hey, I've got this fruit and you've got that fruit. Great, let's trade or let's, I mean, even Willamette Valley Vineyards got their first cuttings on loan from Bethel Heights. And let us pay it off over time. So, I mean, who does that?
First cuttings mean first fruits.
Fruit, yep. Cuttings are the fruit that you planted. Yeah.
So you're saying the first time that they made fruit, they basically got all the grapes, all the fruit from on credit.
Yeah, from another
a competitor.
Well, but we don't look at it that way. We don't actually call them competitors. They are comrades in our whole journey. You know, it's like, you know, if we rise, they rise. The boat rises, mm-hmm. you know, and it's that has been how the Oregon wine industry is. It's not unique just to Willamette Valley Vineyards. This is the industry here.
So the first time Willamette Valley Vineyards put wine into bottles and sold it was what year?
1989. Wow. Yeah. And we went public and then we went public in 1989. That's how we were able to do it because we had to build a facility. So before this all happened, I mean, Jim literally used all the money that he had to put a down payment on this old grown over plum orchard right there mm-hmm. off the 5. Mm-hmm. Little old lady at the bottom of the hill told Jim, you don't want that property. And he says, well, why is that? And she goes, well, my uncle owned that part of the property. My dad owned this part, the lower part. And our plums down here, well, they'd be big and, you know, they'd weigh more and we'd make more money off of them when we'd make them into prunes. But my uncle's farm up there, those prunes were small. They'd shrivel up. They were called them whiskey prunes. That meant there was a lot of sugar in the fruit. The sugar was spiking in the fruit. And so Jim's eyes lit up like a kid in the candy store and goes, are you kidding me? And bought that property.
Wow. Went public. So who was the first people that bought stock?
There were a lot of friends, I think, and some local people who had been interested in what he was doing. And at first it was kind of private, but it still wasn't enough to really push the needle to where Jim wanted to be, or really not just Jim, but where these peoples that were investing had wanted it to go. And so Jim is the first person in U.S. history to ever self-underwrite his own stock offering for NASDAQ. Like, that's insane to imagine. They hire underwriters to do that. That's crazy that he did it on his own.
Well, not just in his field, but ever.
Yeah. And well, I mean, it's, you know, it's happened since, but he was the first person ever at that time, and that was in 1989. And then he had to find investors. And they had, NASDAQ had the stipulation that the investors had to be from Oregon and Washington only. And we were just coming out of a terrible recession in the 1980s. It's 1989. But also was fortuitous because people were trying to find something to invest their money in. They were looking for that type of a thing. It's like a tax shelter, or like it was time to give to invest again.
Wow. So. We look back at 1989 and how that was pre-Spotted Owl and pre, you know, Oregon wine industry as we know it today. And most of the people, perhaps even listening today, weren't even born yet. Wow.
Small community.
Way, way back.
Well, and something interesting in that.
Well, we're going back to that interesting thing in just a minute. We're going to break. We're talking to Wendy Bennett, Bendy Kirkland, from Willamette Valley Vineyards, talking all things wine, the industry, its growth, and how it affects the Mid-Valley. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
And welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne in the KYKN studios, and we are talking about Willamette Valley Vineyards. A little bit of its history, its growth, its impact on Oregon. Boy, in agriculture, we talk a lot about it as being an agricultural region, and wine has never been more important in terms of how it drives so many fortunes in terms of sustaining so many jobs and actually bringing money in. We talk about economic development a lot of times. There's a word called traded sector jobs. Okay, that's three words. Traded sector businesses, but that's where money from outside the region comes into our region and stays. So that's how we grow our own wealth, as it were, as you know, with different industries here in the valley. Well, we have wine. We have wine in the Willamette Valley and neighboring valleys, and Jim Bourneau and Willamette Valley Vineyards has some great stories on how it has built. We have Wendy Bennett with us to talk about it. So just before the break, you said, oh, well, an interesting thing happened, and they were talking about the early years of starting up and underwriting initial offerings of stock for Willamette Valley Vineyards and building it from the ground up. Well, then what happened?
Well, then we had to find investors.
Right.
And, you know, where are you going to find investors in Oregon and Washington, which was a stipulation. And so Jim came up with this brilliant idea to go out to the Newport Seafood and Wine Festival. And so his good friend had a fifth grader, and he paid for an outing at the Oregon coast for all these fifth graders, but they had to collect data for him. So they recorded every license plate of every car at Newport Seafood and Wine Festival, went to the DMV, got their addresses.
You could do that back then.
Uh-huh. And then what they did is they couldn't afford the mail out to invite people to invest in Willamette Valley Vineyards. So they convinced Newport Chamber of Commerce to pay for the mail out in exchange for these addresses that they could then, you know, market to these people. And they did.
Wow.
Yeah, and all those people, they got this nice hard invitation instead of like a letter, you know, it was a card. It was like a call to them.
Mm-hmm.
And they came out.
Wow. And some became investors.
And thank God they did. I'm telling you, Willamette Valley Vineyards would not have been here. I don't know. Maybe it still would have. Jim's pretty brilliant, but not in this way had those people not believed in what we were doing.
All right. So now we are 25 years later, right? More.
No, a lot more than that. 36.
36 years later from that initial. Mm-hmm. Wow. And your beautiful facility up there just off of I-5, right? And you have a tasting room, and you have a special event rooms, and, of course, all the vines.
Yeah.
You can't grow all the vines you need there, right?
Right. Yeah, that's probably one of our smaller locations. I mean, as much as we'd love to grow everything there, our neighbors don't necessarily want to move, and I can't blame them. But the other beauty part is when you grow fruit in different areas, you're going to get a different fruit. And that's great. We're always looking for the Holy Grail. And, you know, we've got to kind of pop around, and we grow fruit all over the state.
I got to tell you, wine science kind of boggles my mind, right? Because you're talking about different chemistry and different dirt and different hillsides. And then given that there's different hillsides and different dirt and, on a different side of the sunshine, right?
Yeah.
And then you have all the different kinds of grapes that exist, mm-hmm. right? And then you have the vagaries of the weather.
Yeah.
And you can't possibly know what you're going to get on a year-to-year basis. Yeah. And sometimes, like you said, it's going to be the Holy Grail. It's going to be a perfect combination of rain and sunshine and dirt and chemistry and the right grapes and blending the right grapes and having the right winemaker. And it's mind-boggling how everybody knows what they're doing.
Yeah, it is a true science. That is absolutely sure. And an art form at the exact same time. Mm-hmm. It is mind-boggling. I could not agree with you more.
All right. So who makes the wine?
The winemaker.
Now, and winemaker. You have one winemaker?
We've got a couple winemakers for different projects. So we have our head winemaker, Joe Ibrahim. He's at the main estate with his assistant, Gabby Prefontaine. And they are quite the pair.
Okay, stop right there. Mm-hmm. Ibrahim and Prefontaine. Yeah. Is it a requirement to have a great name to
work
there?
Great names, right?
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Well, you know, Joe's from the East Coast. He's a New York kid that made his way to the West Coast.
Good for him. He escaped.
Yep, he did. We're kind of like the Goldilocks. Or I should say maybe the baby bear of the three bears, where he went to Washington to make wine, then went to California to make wine, and it was too cold in Washington, it was too hot in California, and we're kind of like just right.
Oh, good. So, sorry I interrupted you, but those are great names. So, so you have two winemakers.
We do.
Okay.
And those are the main estate, Gabby and Joe, and they make our wines for the Willamette brand and Griffin Creek, because we make wine from Southern Oregon as well. So it's a different label, though, because there are very strict label laws in Oregon to make sure everything's authentic and to protect different regions so that people know where your fruit's coming from. So we have a label called Willamette Valley Vineyards, where all that fruit comes from the Willamette Valley. And then we have a label called Griffin Creek, where it's from Southern Oregon. It says from Rogue Valley, and that's where that fruit comes from.
Okay, is that a different grape?
Yeah, different grape varietals, yeah.
So let's talk about it, about that. Everybody talks about Pinot Noir,
oh, yes.
Right? Pinot Noir, where this is the region, it's the climate, it's mm-hmm. is where you grow it. Okay. But what else is growing? I mean, that's a specific grape.
Well, Pinot within itself, I got to tell you, it is like one of the most sought after grapes in the entire world. It's one of the most expensive wines in the entire world is Pinot Noir, and one of the most difficult grapes to grow. They say it was made by the devil's hand. it has brought pleasure and pain to every winemaker. They say Pinot only grows in a few places in the world and really grows well in even fewer than that. And we happen to be like the perfect location with everything to grow great Pinot.
What was that movie? The guy waxed poetic about the Pinot Noir grape.
Sideways?
Sideways.
Yes.
Sideways. And you described that pretty darn well. Did you see Sideways, Dave?
No.
So
it's a little irreverent. But it's funny.
Yeah, and he's waxing poetic about how fragile the thing is. And it's just exactly what you're talking about. Yep. If it's not this type of dirt, and it's not this type of climate, if not this kind of combination of events, then it's not Pinot Noir and it's not a success. Well, that was interesting. I just remember that it's one of the greatest wine speeches ever in cinema, right?
And it literally skyrocketed the sales of Pinot Noir. So thank you so much, Rex Pickett, for writing that book and for making the movie. It's really funny.
All right. So if you don't know about Pinot Noir and if you want to know this reference, you can stream it probably. You can find it somewhere on the internet. So Sideways. Right.
Yeah. It's funny movie. Pinot Noir is a medium-bodied red wine mm-hmm. and has a lot of layers and a lot of complexity and aromas that are beautiful.
What else does Willamette Valley Vineyards bottle and what other varietals?
Chardonnay has become really popular in Oregon. In fact, they're about to do the Chardonnay celebration next month up at the Allison Hotel, where 60 Chardonnay producers, and there's more than that in Oregon, that's just all that they could fit inside of that room. 60 producers, including ourselves, are going to be pouring wine up there.
So are we in a Chardonnay region?
Yeah.
Really?
So have you ever heard of fine Burgundy? Oh, a glass of Burgundy, right?
Yeah.
That's Pinot Noir. We can't call it Burgundy because we're not Burgundy, France. So we call it Pinot Noir.
Oh.
And if you've ever heard of white Burgundy Chardonnay. They're sisters. They're from the same place, from Burgundy, France. Crazy. I know. Did your mind just blow?
Yes. All right. So that was the sound of his brain exploding.
Yeah. In my 20s, when I started to learn a little bit about wine. Of course, in California, you had in red wines, you had mm-hmm. Cabernet Sauvignon, and you had Merlot, and you had Zinfandel.
Mm-hmm.
And they corresponded to some French grapes, but Cabernet Sauvignon.
They're French. Yeah, they're Rhone varietals.
And isn't Cabernet basically not Burgundy, but...
It's a Bordeaux.
Thank mm-hmm. you. Sorry, mind blank.
Yeah.
But I did not know Pinot Noir. I thought the Burgundy was more affiliated with like a Merlot, but not a Pinot.
Yeah, Merlot is Bordeaux as well. Huh? Merlot's the sister of Cabernet.
I'm glad we have a wine expert here.
Well, you know, and the wines you just described from California, beautiful varietals, they're big reds.
Yeah.
Where Pinot Noir is medium.
Right.
Medium red. So
big fat reds. Dark.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Heavy and
yeah.
I like them. They're luscious. Yeah. I do like them. Can we grow them up here? Every time I gotta tell you, and I'll confess that I see the Cabernet Sauvignon from Washington.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah.
They make great cab there.
Do they?
Yeah.
What about Oregon?
Oregon, in Southern Oregon.
Southern Oregon.
The Rogue and Umpqua Valley have been known to grow some stellar Cabernet.
Okay. So going back to Willamette Valley Vineyards, mm-hmm. that's where you're from. That's who we're talking about. Obviously, Pinot Gris.
Yes. Pinot Gris for sure.
Chardonnay now.
We're the first place in the United States ever to grow Pinot Gris is Oregon.
Wow.
Yep.
And Chardonnay.
Chardonnay, Riesling.
Okay, and what else? Other varietals that
Gruner
are
Gruner Veltliner, how about that one? Wow. Yeah, Gruner, delicious. Right. Müller Thurgau, ever heard of that? No,
I've
Viognier,
heard of,
yeah.
Wow. Can you describe all of them in exquisite detail, probably?
Yes, but we don't have enough time.
So those are all different varietals that are being bottled by Willamette Valley Vineyards, right? Yeah. All right, what do they not do?
We don't do Zinfandel. Zinfandel is not, as far as I understand, an Oregon grape that's growing in Oregon. I mean, there are a lot of varietals in the world.
Really.
And some of them just don't grow well here. But things are growing in Oregon.
So a lot of people don't realize that Willamette Valley Vineyards is only really making wine out of Oregon product, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
Oregon grapes.
Yep. Yeah, we even make wine in Walla Walla region, but it's on the Oregon side.
Oregon grapes. Can I say that? All right, we're going to come right back. We're talking to Wendy Bennett Kirkland from Willamette Valley Vineyards. We're going to talk a little bit about what is yet to come for the industry and in Oregon. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne and KYKN, and we are talking about wine and Willamette Valley Vineyards and the industry as it exists as an agricultural powerhouse in our region. Marion, Polk, Yamhill County, Tualatin area. Our guest is Wendy Bennett Kirkland. Wendy Bennett Kirkland, recently married, so big congratulations to the family. She is a senior wine ambassador at Willamette Valley Vineyards. So much great history. Boy, is there a coffee table book about Willamette Valley Vineyards? If not, let's hire somebody to do it.
You know, it is really quite the story.
It is an amazing story. We can't even touch on it in this hour because we have so many other industry things to talk about. But Jim Bourneau and his single-mindedness, honestly, and his stick-to-itiveness, that's a good way of saying it.
That's a good word. That's
going
good word
to the state capitol and creating law that allows some wineries to branch out, do different things, and make more money and survive and then thrive. And there are some, I would say, that would say we would not have the wine industry in the entire state without the efforts of Jim.
Absolutely.
Jim Bourneau, a former first citizen, City of Salem, honored her, have the Chamber of Commerce honored him as a first citizen and well-earned. Anyway, but let's move on because we were talking about the varieties of wines, what's grown in Oregon, what's not grown in Oregon. Pretty much if it's grown in Oregon, you guys are making wine out of it, right?
Yeah.
And part of the science of winemaking is also finding that blend. Are we going to blend this high hillside with that hillside? Is this going to make a good, there's a lot of like hit and miss, perhaps.
Yeah.
And then you take, you can read your wine labels, and this has so much of this type of grape and so much of that type of grape. And again, it's a winemaker's craft to try to find things that blend together to get all new tastes and so forth, right?
Well, Oregon does have a very strict label law, though, something mm-hmm. that's important to note. It's called the 90-10 law. It means 90% of what is inside of that bottle has to be what it says on the front of the label. So if you're going to call it Pinot Noir, 90% of it has to be Pinot Noir. Now, granted, we're doing 100%. We don't really have to worry because we're growing it. But there are different laws in different states. Our neighbors, California, are 75-25.
Wow.
Yeah.
So can't you just make up a name? Can you just make up a name and say, I'm going to blend, you know, 35, 35, 35, and then call it something else?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
But then you have the uphill marketing climb of people that are saying, what is that?
What is that? Exactly. Right. And then you got to look on the bottle and see what the blend is. But
All right.
Not uncommon, but they do blend Pinots. So there's over 300 varietals of Pinot Noir, and we're growing somewhere close to about 10 of them.
Wow. Are there more varietals of Pinot Noir or cannabis?
Cannabis,
yeah. That's another Willamette Valley crop that is not today.
Making us some money, though. Yeah.
All right, let's talk about the vastness of it, of the industry, and how much it's grown, because we're going back 36 years, and we're starting the first bottling. And now, how many barrels are we selling? Do you do it by the cases? How do you quantify?
We're selling it by bottles and cases. I have only once in my life sold an entire barrel, which was really exciting to do. We're selling bottles and cases across the country and in the state. And actually, we're doing kegged wine for some places that want to do B2 Tap House is doing some kegged wine. And that has changed. Packaging is changing a lot.
Is it in a metal keg or a wooden keg?
It's in a recyclable plastic keg that can be reused and recycled.
Interesting. Yeah. Wow. Can we buy those and take them out and home parties?
You got to have a license for that.
All right. So let's go back to the size again. How many of the cases are you guys creating and shipping and selling?
Yeah.
And how many sales? I'm going to throw all these questions at you, Wendy. How many of these sales as a percentage happen in the state of Oregon versus outside?
Well, we sell most of our wine here in Oregon, for sure. Oregon and Washington are our two biggest customers, right? And then we do sell across the country, and we do really well there too. Doing about 25% of our production is being sold across the country. And we do have a lot of direct to consumers too, because I know we haven't gotten into this topic yet, but we have a lot of shareholders and owners, or owners as we like to call them, that live all across the country that want Oregon wine too. So we're not just selling in grocery store and wine shop. We're selling directly to people in their own homes, where people are like, I want these special wines from Oregon, things that we never distribute. Some people can get them in their homes.
And there's a wine club, of course.
And the wine club, yeah.
So you can join. I don't have to be local to join the wine club, right?
Correct. Yeah, we have wine club members all across the country.
We have people that stream KYKN all across the country.
Yeah?
Yeah.
See, there you go.
Sometimes outside of the country because we're on, you know, KYKN.com. Yeah. And if you want to hear this, by the way, if your loved ones missed the show and they want to hear it, you can listen to the podcast right off of KYKN.com.
So. I love a good podcast.
And And if the listener missed any of the previous shows or wants to hear this one again, I can do so again. Anyway, so you can do anything, wine club?
Our tasting shipments. Room. I mean, we have a restaurant. People come out there.
Tell us the hours.
Sure. 11 to 6 every day, except on Friday nights, we stay open till 8 p.m.
11 to 6 every day. To 6. What happens after 6? Do we get to eat? Is there a restaurant?
We close at 6 o'clock.
Kick you out.
Yeah.
Okay. But every day.
Every day, yeah. We do have a restaurant on there. I mean,
in February.
Yeah.
When there's nothing to do but watch hockey and basketball on TV.
But people are up there.
That's horrible. That's awesome.
People are up there enjoying themselves and having a nice cup of soup and, you know,
whatever. Oh, I've got friends that like to do that. I like to go up and spend a little time, have a little nibble, taste a little wine. That is terrific. All right. Sorry, we're getting distracted. I want to talk about how much wine is sold and created. Grapes that are built in this area?
Well, that's a pretty complicated question to answer, so I'm going to do my best for you. So we're producing somewhere over 100,000 cases of wine.
Okay.
But to put that in perspective for you so you get an idea of how large that is, Oregon is only making 0.08% of the world's wine.
Wow. Okay.
It's very small.
All right.
Okay, and a company like, let's say, Robert Mondavi, great company, wonderful wines, they are making twice as much in one day than we're making in an entire year. Does that help put some things in perspective for you? So although that sounds like a lot of wine, and certainly for Oregon, we're one of the larger wineries. We're probably ranked at somewhere around 4 or 5.
Who are the other big players?
Oh, King Estates is a very notable wine company. Erath, which was purchased by Chateau Saint Michel not long ago, they are producing a lot of wine. A to Z A to Z wines. You mostly see those out on a nationwide level, but they are here.
That's the label?
Yeah, A to Z, yeah.
They're, I've never seen an A to Z label. Do I yeah, not buy yeah, the right
wines? Their wines are great. They're just okay. fine. Nothing. Right. They are Oregon all the way. They're part of Rex Hill, so you might recognize Rex Hill's name a little more dominantly here in Oregon. Other big ones might be Elk Cove. I mean, there's a lot of them out there. Domaine Serenes.
How big is Rogue Valley?
Rogue Valley is what we call the flyover reds because people go to Napa, fly over Southern Oregon into Portland, go to the Willamette Valley and miss out on some incredible vineyards down there. But the Rogue Valley has Troon. Troon is
a bigger
vineyard down there. And that's where our Griffin Creek label comes from as well. And there are a lot of smaller ones, though, you'll find in Southern Oregon. But they're enjoying a bit of growth. People love those big reds from Oregon.
All right. So it's huge for us mm-hmm. in terms of we think there are vines growing everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
In this three-county region. But really, it's almost a niche size for the industry in general.
Well, I mean, if you can imagine, here in Oregon, we have about 1,300 vineyards. Right? Okay. We have 900 wineries in the Willamette Valley. The Willamette Valley is the size of Delaware, just in case you don't know that. It's a huge valley, but within it is unbelievable amounts of very, very high quality fruit.
900 wineries.
Yeah.
We're going on a wine tasting tour. You want to do all 900. It's going to take a few years.
Yeah.
All right. So, but 1,300 vineyards. So they're growing grapes. People are obviously growing grapes for some of these vineyards to make wine out of.
Correct. We have people that grow for us, too. We contract fruit from places, too.
I love it when you prompt the questions that I'm supposed to prompt you with. That is awesome.
Reading your mind.
What percentage of the grapes that you turn into wine are grown on land owned by Willamette Valley Vineyards versus purchased on contract?
A very large portion of ours is owned by Willamette Valley Vineyards. I'd say about 75% of what we're producing is our own fruit. We do have the Elton Vineyards that was started by Betty and Dick O'Brien back in 1983. They were both educators. Dick O'Brien was my social studies teacher in middle school at Parrish.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And they started Elton Vineyards, which is a very large vineyard property that we've been contracting fruit from them since forever, pretty much the whole time. And it's ours. It's our label. We have the exclusive contract, but they own the land.
So let's talk a little bit about it, because she said bought. And so Willamette Valley Vineyards has grown. It's grown, you know, organically, and it's grown with new investors. There was a stock offering in 2015, 2016. Yep. Some of my friends bought that stock.
Yeah.
And they go up and, you know, they're owners, and they get the wine club benefits and all that good stuff. How much through acquisition and how much through organic kind of growth for Willamette Valley Vineyards?
Really, a lot of this is organic. I mean, things just happen. It's wild that you see opportunities or people come to us with opportunities, and it has been incredible. We did merge companies in the mid-90s with Tualatin Estate. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was probably one of the largest, I can't call it an acquisition because it was a partnership. It was a merging of two really great people, Bill Fuller and Jim Bruneau, who decided, you know, let's get in this together instead. We're going to be more powerful together than we would separate.
Oh, that is a terrific story.
Yeah.
So what were they doing prior? So Tualatin was based, obviously, north of here.
Yeah, Tualatin is way up in Forest Grove and was and still is considered to be one of the greatest vineyards in all of Oregon. Planted in 73 by an actual winemaker. Everyone else who'd moved here, they were either amateurs, you know, that were engineers and just liked doing this as a hobby, or, you know, people who just graduated from college. And now, I mean, we're just nailing it. It's incredible.
Wow. Oregon likes its spirits, doesn't it?
You know,
we've got the beer industry. And
cideries.
Cider industry. We've got the wines, and people just like to do it and like the lifestyle. And, of course, now there's distillery for hard spirits as well.
Yeah.
As a growing industry in Oregon. So, all right. So, Tualatin Estates, but there was the merger. There was combined. But is there a Tualatin Estate brand? I mean, label?
It is. Yeah, the label's there. The vineyard's there. You can go out and visit it.
But it's still part of an umbrella that's where Willamette Valley
Vineyards still tell the story. I just saw Bill Fuller, who started that winery in the 1970s, today.
Wow.
Yeah, celebrating his 83rd birthday.
All right, so we're going to come back. We'll talk a little bit more about some consolidation, some growth, and outside money coming in, because you mentioned that Chateau St. Michel, is that correct?
Yeah.
Winery here in Oregon, and there's California types doing the same thing. All right, we're talking to Wendy Bennett Kirkland from Willamette Valley Vineyard. She is a senior wine ambassador for this incredible company with a huge impact in the Mid-Valley. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. You're listening to 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome back to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart. We're talking about wine today, and this is one of those topics that I find interesting that I don't know very much about. So it's really nice to have an expert in Willamette Valley Vineyards, Senior Wine Ambassador Wendy Bennett Kirkland. I know just enough to be dangerous, and it's like art. I know what I like and some things I don't like, but... There's so many things to talk about of growing wine, wine grapes, and how and the whole creation process. But I do want to talk about Willamette Valley Vineyards. And the industry, we've touched on it, but it's hard to express to our listener that what an impact it has economically, this region. Now it's tourism and it's production and it's growth and the agricultural and the commodity. Everything. It's enormous impact in our area. Whether you drink wine or not, you have to recognize that. And then Willamette Valley Vineyards, and we talk a lot around here about people who have launched businesses and taken a risk. And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. But the willingness to invest in the area should not be understated. And so we want to applaud Jim Bruneau in doing that. Isn't
it
amazing?
It's remarkable what has been created there. In Little Salem, Oregon.
So how special is Willamette Valley Vineyards and its location there off of I-5?
In my estimation, I mean, if you were going to ask me how I feel as a local Salem kid, I'm a North Salem Viking. Mm. For me, I think it's unreal. You know, to be able to bring out-of-town guests, drive up that hill, and let them see one of the most tremendous views in the valley. It was super kind staff, beautiful building. Mm-hmm. I mean, it is a gem. It's an icon, you know, and I work there, yeah, right? But I love my job.
Clearly.
Love my job, and it's because I get to work with a person like Jim Bruneau who is so open to ideas. You know, he's not a micromanager. He's not stifling. He's not pretentious like many might believe in the wine industry. He's super collaborative. You know, he doesn't talk about himself. He's not an egotist. He wants everyone to be happy and healthy, and that's awesome for me.
And you're just one of, what, 100 employees?
Yeah.
So pretty good size operation.
And it is.
You know, even back in my earliest days when I made it, employed, you know, a dozen people, I just always took pride in that I created something that allowed somebody to pay the rent.
Yes.
Right? And now... Willamette Valley Vineyards not only does that in many different ways, from the person that trims the grapes to the salespeople to the winemaker and all the hospitality people. You know, it's a lot of jobs and it's a lot of people paying the rent because of what was grown. And I always want to celebrate that and not take that for granted.
Yeah.
Right? All right. So Willamette Valley Vineyards, you have events. Let's talk about that really quickly. Mm-hmm. Other ways that people can enjoy you guys.
Well, we have a lot of fun out there. You know, we didn't build that big facility for nothing.
Yeah.
We want to be
able
to...
Can we book it?
Yeah, you can book it for parties and events and stuff like that. We do all kinds of stuff.
So we can do anniversary parties and weddings and all that good stuff. Yeah. All right.
We do events. We've got a big one actually coming up. It's our big Moe's Chowder Fest, 22nd annual Chowder Fest.
Moe's Chowder Fest.
Yeah, they come in and they bring the ocean with them. Practically.
Really?
Yeah.
It's so Moe's come in-house and there's a big fest. And what wine goes with chowder?
Pinot Gris. Pinot Gris. It's like Pinot Gris heaven. it's hysterical. We have a live band and it's, I mean, it's all hands on deck. We open the entire winery up. So wow. You're eating chowder in the cellar.
All right, Dave, have you experienced Willamette Valley Vineyards deck?
No, I'd right. love to see it. Though.
I think we're going to have to do a remote or something.
Ooh,
yeah.
Limit the alcohol intake, perhaps.
What?
You know,
what a downer you are.
The deck is incredible.
The deck's it is incredible. Right. We had that remodel in 2014, and it just really made that deck
when's
great.
The Chowder Fest?
Chowder Fest is on the 23rd, 24th, 25th of this month.
Wow.
Yeah, up. And you find
I'm
all
so
the...
I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah.
23rd, 24th, 25th of this month. Yep. You got to go to Willamette Valley Vineyards.
Yep. You go to the website.
Fest.
You can check it
What's
out.
What's the website?
WVV.
WVV.
Willamette Valley Vineyards.
Okay, you have to do it with your radio voice.
Oh, www.wvv.com.
Yeah, that
that was a terrible
that
radio
work,
voice.
Wendy. Okay. You stomp grapes up there. I know you've had music events up there, right?
Yeah, we have concerts. And
what else do we need to put on our calendar?
Well, you know, honestly, just come out on a Friday night for a date. You know what I mean? It's
You're
just,
not asking me out.
Well, no, my husband will probably not enjoy that very much. But what I mean by that is we built that facility for you. I get a lot of people who pass by that. Well, they say like, you know, I drive to Eugene and I see that place all the time and I've never been up here and now I'm here and wow, what do I do? And I say, get some wine and relax.
All right. And we think regionally here, other tasting rooms, there's other places to taste.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And I love to go out and visit my friends over at Bethel Heights, Brooks Winery, Meth Ven, Cubanese. Left Coast. I mean, honestly, I could keep rolling it off. Eola, Ilahi. I mean, Coelho, which is not far away. A lot of great ones.
Hopefully somebody out there listening right now, do you know what our region really needs? Is somebody that will do the tourism van and or limo.
You know they do that
they
already.
They do that, yeah.
No, but I mean a big way. So,
oh, yeah.
Of course, when we get commercial air service, we're going to have people coming off the airplane and into this, and they're going to, you know, hit one after the other and have tie-ins with the Grand Hotel. We had them on this month. And anyway.
Maybe you're finding your second job now, you know?
Yeah, I got enough jobs. Okay.
Be like his fourth one.
Right.
But those vans should be all over the valley. There's so many. Okay, I'm reading my notes. 900 wineries.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Right?
Yeah.
You know, that should be 90 vans. Anyway, all right. Tasting rooms, though, to get Willamette Valley Vineyards. There's one in McMinnville, right downtown?
Yes. Yep, right downtown on 3rd Street, the historic part of town. Great little tasting room.
So if you're not going to make it to South Salem. Salem/Turner.
Yeah.
I don't know what the address is.
It's Turner, but might as well be Salem.
We'll call it Salem.
Yeah.
So McMinnville, where else?
Well, we've got a tasting room up in Forest Grove, the Tualatin Estate Vineyard, the old, beautiful winery that's still there. You're welcome to go there. We do have a new tasting room that's being built right now in Dundee, which is kind of this wine mecca area. Mm-hmm. All the big dogs are there. So we're getting a tasting room there. We have a tasting room in Walla Walla, Washington. Even though we're growing Oregon fruit, we have a tasting room just over the border in Washington in Walla Walla.
I'm really struggling. I never knew that. But,
yeah.
You know, I know it's an Oregon company and it's Pinot Noir and blah, blah, blah. But not one grape from outside of the state.
Not one grape from outside of the state.
That is so amazing and...
And we also grow we grow very sustainably. We're a live certified vineyard and a salmon safe company. That's really important too to us.
I don't even know what that means.
Don't you worry. We'll get it on another
Dundee,
show.
All right, so when does Dundee open?
Dundee's opening, I think, in spring of 2020, so coming up pretty soon.
All right, so someone's going to come up and they're going to buy a bottle. Which bottle do they buy, Wendy? They're going to buy one bottle and they're going to leave with it.
The 2015 Signature Cuvée is incredible.
Signature Cuvée.
I am a Chardonnay girl all the way. I love Chardonnay, but if you're going to get a really great bottle of Pinot, the Signature Cuvée is beautiful.
Okay.
Or the Bernot Block.
That sounds good.
Is there a variety pack?
Is a variety pack.
All right. So everybody, check it out. Go and taste the wines. Celebrate what is built in the Willamette Valley. Celebrate the diversity of our agricultural sector and how it makes something really yummy. That makes you feel great on a Friday evening, right?
Health benefits, too.
Don't forget the health benefits. We're going to live longer, living like Italians, right? All right. Thanks so much, Wendy Bennett Kirkland, for being with us and being an ambassador for Willamette Valley Vineyards and telling us a little bit about the industry. We learned a lot, and we'll have you back on. Thank you for being a newsmaker.
My pleasure.
Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne here on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
See you tomorrow.
Taking you home every afternoon, 3 to 6 p.m. Live, call Buck Sexton and participate in the conversation on 1430 KYK. This has been Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.